We're up to Parshat Miketz, probably the most suspenseful, exciting parsha in the Torah. We've reached a point where Yosef, who's a genius, and he's spent his younger years pampered in his father's house, the chosen pampered child, suddenly finds himself sold into slavery, and he has to worry, Mr. Potiphar, is your wine warm enough? No, I want it warmer. Mr. Potiphar, is your wine too warm? Yeah, go cool it off. He has to be there at his beckoning. Yosef goes from being the most pampered kid in the wealthy home of Yaakov Avinu to being a slave in Potiphar's house, where Potiphar's wife is going to order him in every direction. Go here, go there, bring me this, bring me that. He's responsible for all the menial tasks. He rises. Potiphar sees that he's very successful. And boom, he does everything right. One of the rules in life, when you do something right, be prepared that the outcome might not be what you expect. You did right, right? Yosef did everything right, and he has to spend the next 12 years of his life in jail. He doesn't see daylight. He's in a pit. He's deep in a dungeon in a cell for 12 years. And after 10 years are up, he's risen in the ranks in the prison. He's taken care of all the prisoners. And he's very nice to the butler and the baker. And even though these two guys tried to cheat with Pharaoh's daughter, and so Pharaoh wanted them dead, so when they have a dream, he interprets it well for the butler, and he senses, and he's right, Yosef's correct. 10 years are up, it's time for him to leave prison, and he senses it. And so when Yosef sees the butler's going to leave in 3 days, he feels the timing is right for him to leave too. And he tells the butler, just remember me, please, because I've been sold so many times and I've done nothing wrong that I'm here in prison. And in heaven they say, Yosef, you're supposed to do hishtadlus, but you went too far. Yosef, you told the butler you have no hope but him. Shouldn't have said that. And so in heaven the decree shifts. Yosef was supposed to get out with the butler. It was supposed to happen. And another 2 years, boom, Gilad, we got to move forward. And the parsha will take questions in 20 minutes, okay? Assuming we've made it to Ravi. So, 2 more years. The doors are shut, and the butler forgets him. And there's a very important medrash on the last 2 words of the parsha. V'lo zachar sar ha-mashkim et Yosef v'yishkacheu. The Medrash says, every day he'd tell himself, in the next conversation I'm going to mention it to Paro. He kept pushing it off. When this comes up, I'll mention Yosef to Paro. We know how that happens. You know, there are things in life that we push off. Answering that email until we suddenly forget about it. Dealing with that bill. Calling up and shutting our cell phone plan in the country we left. There are little things that we don't deal with. And the Medrash says that's what happened. According to one Medrash, Lo Zachar. The word Zachar in Torah means active remembrance. Zachorit Yom HaShabbat means be active, make Kiddush. Make a note that it's Shabbos now. Make a note when Shabbos ends. Make Havdalah. We have a mitzvah d'oraita to denote where Shabbos begins, where Shabbos ends. Zachor, be active. Lo zachar. The Sarah Mashkim, the butler, was not active in mentioning, in remembering Yosef. Raishkecheu, ultimately he forgot him. That's a point for us. We have duties in life. We have to remember that things that are important, we shouldn't let them fall by the wayside. One of the things that human beings are very bad at is showing appreciation. The butler had his appreciation for Yosef, but now the Medrash says Rabbi Eliezer was giving shir, and a woman walked in and said to him, Rabbi, I had a dream. What's your dream? The doorpost of my house is broken. He said, oh, what a great dream. You're going to have another son. Okay. She had another son. Next year, 2 years down the road, she comes back. Rabbi Eliezer's not there. She says to the students, where is your rabbi? So they say, what do you want? So she says, I want to ask the rabbi a question. So the students say, what's your question? So she says, I had a dream. The doorpost to my house is broken. The students say, you don't need the rabbi. Your husband's going to die. She starts weeping and sobbing, and she's leaving, and Rabbi Eliezer comes, and he asks the students what happened. So they say, she came. She told us she had a dream. We interpreted it to her. He said, what's her dream? They said, her dream was the doorpost to her house is broken. And what'd you interpret it? So they said, we told her husband's going to die. So he told the students, you killed her husband. Okay, good job, guys. That's the concept. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Brachot, Chalomot, Holachin, Achar, Apeh. The dreams go by the interpretation. Rabbi Eliezer also knew that there's an interpretation to that dream that her husband's going to die. But he didn't give her that interpretation. He gave her a positive interpretation. When Yosef interprets the dream to the butler and says, you will be reinstated in 3 days, Yosef had a choice how to interpret that dream. And so Yosef gave him a good interpretation. And the Medrash goes into why the baker deserved a bad interpretation. There's a reason Yosef had him hung. In our parsha, Paro is going to have a dream. In his dream, he will see that there will be 42 years of hunger. You will notice that there are 6 times that he sees the hungry cows. Yosef will squash them all and say 7 years. It's all one dream. He sees 6 times the message of 7 bad. But Yosef gives it a good interpretation. He says there's going to be only 7 bad years. He gives a good interpretation to the dream. The minimal bad interpretation to the dream. So 2 years have passed since the butler promised Yosef that he will mention him. And Pharaoh had a dream. And in his dream, he is standing on the Nile. The Nile is the source of sustenance in Egypt. The Nile is what they worshipped in Egypt. And Pharaoh standing on the Nile. Those of you who heard the WhatsApp message last night, you know the meaning of why he's standing on the Nile. And coming out of the Nile, he sees 7 cows. And if you compare the dream that's described in the Torah with the dream that Paro will tell Yosef, there's a difference. And Yosef will correct Paro on about 6 counts in his dream. Paro adulterates the dream. And every point that he switches from the way the Torah describes the dream, Yosef comes back and tells him, no, it's not exactly what happened. Let me tell you what you dreamt. He corrects it. So pay attention. In the parasha, you'll see there's a difference between the description of the dream, Paro's description of the dream, Yosef's description of the dream. Yosef goes back to the original one. So Paro dreams, in a nutshell, he sees 7 healthy cows coming out of the Nile. They're grazing. And then 7 cows come out, and they are emaciated. And then they do something their cows don't do. It's a very abnormal dream, because usually you dream something that's in the range of what you see in modern life. You don't dream something that's unfathomable. Cows don't eat meat, right? Cows are herbivores. Kosher animals are herbivores. It's a rule. The animals we're allowed to eat are herbivores. So the cows are now going to consume. They're going to eat the meat of the healthy cows. That's not normal. And Paro awakens. It's almost the morning. He's troubled. He goes back to sleep. Has a second dream. 7 stalks grow, and they're healthy. And then 7 stalks grow who are thin, and they swallow up the healthy ones. And then Paro wakes up. It's all a dream. So the morning comes. He's very upset. He summons his advisors. So he tells them the dream, and they give him all kinds of interpretations. According to one medrash, Paro dreamed the interpretation of the dream and forgot it. So he's sitting there waiting. Tell me, what's the dream? So they tell him, you'll give birth to 7 daughters and you'll bury 7 daughters. No. You'll conquer 7 enemies and you'll have 7 rebellions. No. Every interpretation they offer him, he says, that's not it. There's a book we discussed a few weeks ago in Parshat Vayishlach. We mentioned the book Sefer HaYashar. And we said that we don't know if Sefer HaYashar is a bona fide medrash or not. It's quoted by some sources and others say it's nonsense. In Sefer HaYashar, it says that when Paro had this dream and his interpreters kept getting it wrong, so Paro ordered to have all the wise men of Egypt executed, just like it says in the book of Daniel. And Yosef appeared on the log of wise men of Egypt, it says in Sefer HaYashar. So they were on their way to kill Yosef too. And the butler says to himself, if Yosef comes to power now, if somehow Paro gets word, he says, look, one thing can happen, Yosef will come to power and I'm in trouble because I didn't keep my word to him. Another thing can happen is that this Paro will get pumped off, and then who knows if I'm going to have any role over here. Maybe I'll lose my position. So the Midrashim give different reasons why the butler steps forward, and all the reasons evolve around one thing: himself. Right. It's one of the things we have to think about in life. We are born intrinsically narcissistic. A person that is supposed to first worry for themselves. That has to be, otherwise we wouldn't live. And a baby is egocentric. He thinks everything revolves around himself. If there's a loud noise, he's sure it has to do with him. If you're upset, he's sure it has to do with him. And everything's about him. As we grow, so we're supposed to understand more and more that not everything is about us, but we don't. We have a very hard time with that. When you go to the post office and the person behind the counter has a scowl, you ask yourself, what did I do? Why are they upset at me? They're not upset at you. They're an upset person. They have nothing to do with you. But they've had a bad day, right? But we automatically assume it has to do with us. That's our nature. And we have a very hard time outgrowing it. What happens when we have to do something positive for someone else? So there we can work on ourselves. And a person can evolve into being a giving person, to do acts that are really selfless. And when we force ourselves to do it once and twice, it's like a muscle. You get better at it. We believe that we develop traits. We can develop ourselves. And so when we do something, the more we do things because they're right, and not just because it's in my interest, the more we do things, every time you do it, you get better at it. And that means next time you'll have an easier time, and you'll do it even better next time. So it's something we have to develop within ourselves. And if we don't focus on developing it, so then what ends up happening is that a person can hardly do anything that isn't about themselves. It's amazing to see how the most altruistic act can be tainted and can be very, very focused on ourselves. The butler, Chazal, point out, every step of the way is about him. And Chazal say, Arurim Arishayim, how cursed are the wicked, that even when they do an act of kindness, they're going to taint it with their poison. So when the butler comes in, what's he going to say? He's going to say, you know, when I was in jail, we had a dream, and with us over there was a nar. He's a fool. Wait, you're about to tell him he's a good dream interpreter. Yeah, but in every other way, he's a fool. Ivri, he's from our enemies, the Hebrews. They slaughter our God. Eved, in case you're going to be impressed with him and you'll want to give him a position in your cabinet, you should know he's a slave. You're not allowed to give him any positions. And so after he makes sure he set up the scene so that he's put down Yosef in every way he can think of, then he says, you know what? He actually interpreted it right. So Paro summons Yosef. Yosef is pulled out of the pit, and they shave him. They give him a haircut. They give him royal clothing. And now he comes to stand in front of Paro. Now, you look at your clothing. You've been in prison for 12 years. You suddenly dressed like a normal human being in broad daylight. And he's summoned to the king's palace. Paros tells Yosef, I dreamt a dream. No one can interpret it. And I heard about you. You just hear dreams and interpret them like that. So what's Yosef supposed to say? This is his chance to make it big. It's amazing. You know, what would we say? Well,
I'm interested.
I, right? we would say something like, I hope so. You know, I'm going to try. We would say something a little humble, right? A little, because we're not sure if we're going to get it right. Yosef says the truth. Here we see the tzidkut. The man's been in prison for 12 years. Do the math. That's over 3,000 days. Over 4,000 days he spent in prison, right? 12 years he's been in prison. This is his chance. The king is called, needs him. Yosef says, not me. Hashem should answer the piece of Paro. And Paro starts telling Yosef a dream. And he's going to adulterate it. I was standing at the edge of the Nile. That's not what it says. He was standing on the Nile, right? He says, I was standing at the edge. And out of the Nile came out seven cows that were healthy. That's not what he dreamt. He dreamt good-looking cows, Yefot Mareh. And he says, Yefet Tor. He tells him, and then seven other cows. I don't know enough about cows. What's a good-looking cow? What's Yefei Tor? What's Yefei Mareh? One is talking about that they're symmetrical. There's two types of beauty. There's symmetry and beauty. And then seven other... What? I don't own cows. No, within beauty, Yefei Mareh and Yefei Tor are two types of beauty. One is symmetry and the other is beauty. And then seven other cows come out impoverished. That's not what he dreamt. He didn't dream that they were impoverished. He didn't dream that they were emaciated. He just dreamt that they were thin. I never saw throughout Egypt such bad-looking cows. And then the bad cows ate the good cows, and you couldn't tell they consumed them. They looked just as bad as they had initially. Doesn't say that in the dream. And then I saw seven stalks, etc. Okay. Yosef tells Paro, it's all one dream. Remember, it wasn't. It's Yosef's interpretation. He chooses to give a good interpretation. God is telling you what he's about to do. The seven good cows represent seven good years. The seven good stalks represent seven good years. The seven bad cows represent seven bad years, etc. And you're going to have 7 years of a lot of good times in Egypt. It's going to be 7 years of plenty. And then there'll be 7 years of famine, which will make the 7 years of plenty be forgotten, and the famine will wipe out the land. And you won't be able to tell that you had seven good years because it's going to be such a bad famine. And you know why you saw the dream twice? Because God's ready, it's about to start. And now I recommend that Pharaoh appoint someone who has understanding and who's wise, and appoint him to take care of the land. And you have to be swift during these 7 years of plenty to prepare the land for the 7 years of famine. And you'll gather the food during those 7 years, and then you'll save it, you'll store it, and then when the 7 years of famine come, you'll have the food and you won't be wiped out. So here we see a very healthy approach. The healthy approach is, if I'm foretold of a tragedy that's coming, I prepare for it. Meaning sometimes people say, oh no, it's coming, so we're finished. Yosef says, no, the whole point is Hashem told you so you can prepare. Pharaoh loves it, his servants love it, and Pharaoh tells them, have you ever seen someone so smart? Look at how he was able to correct me on the dream. He got everything right. So Pharaoh tells Yosef, you know what, now that you were told all of this, you're the guy for the job. You're going to be responsible. Just remember, my throne is above you. So there's a medrash here. The medrash says that Pharaoh had a throne, and there were steps leading up to the throne. And every language you spoke, you could go up another step. And Yosef, if you want the medrash the way your kids will tell you when they come home from school, they're going to tell you that Gabriel, the angel, came to prison the night before and taught Yosef all the languages, so that when he came before Pharaoh, he kept going up the steps until he reached the top step, and he's standing right by Pharaoh. So Pharaoh is standing there, and Yosef goes, wait, there's one more language. I'm missing a step here. Every step he'd reach, he'd talk to Pharaoh in that language. Pharaoh would answer him. And then he'd go to the next step. Okay, he reaches the top step. He's on the landing with Paro. And he says, wait, there's one more language. We didn't talk Hebrew yet. I know Hebrew too. And Paro says, shh, I don't know Hebrew. So Yosef stands there. Paro says, promise me you will never tell anyone that you know more languages than me, because that would risk my throne. So Yosef promises him. He takes a vow that he won't reveal that he knows Hebrew and Pharaoh doesn't. At the end of the book of Bereishis, when Yaakov Avinu will pass away, he will make Yosef promise that he will bury him in Israel. And Yosef will promise. And then after Yaakov passes away, Yosef will go to Pharaoh and say, I need to go to Israel to bury my father. And Pharaoh will say, we can't do that. The country can't survive. You can't leave. And Yosef will say, I promised my father I'm going to take him to Israel and bury him there. And Pharaoh will say, well, break your promise. And Yosef will say, I don't think you want me to break my promises. I always keep my promises, and you want me to always keep my promises. Right, Pharaoh? Pharaoh's going to say, right, go bury your father. That was the promise he makes Yosef promise now will serve Yosef down the line when Yosef will want to go to Israel to bury his father. So Paro gives Yosef his ring. And if you pay attention from this point, from really the beginning of our parasha to the end of our parasha, you will see that the terminology of our parasha is used over and over again in Megillat Esther. Pay attention to how many points from our parasha appear in Megillat Esther. Changing clothing, taking a haircut, taking off the ring. You'll see as you go along, I noticed this is written in Dat Mikra, but you'll pay attention in the parasha, you'll see many points. Going out in the king's chariot, etc. Calling out before him. Yeah, you'll see. So Paro gives him the ring with which you seal, you write down the king's decrees, and he gives him royal clothing and a royal gold necklace, and he gives him a chariot that says he's the second in command, and they call out before him, Avrech, Avrech. This man is Av, he is a father of wisdom, and Reich, he is young in years. Nebuchadnezzar was called the exact opposite. He was called Taf Sar, young in wisdom and old in years. Right? Taf, he's young in wisdom, and Sar, he's an old man. So Yosef is called Av Reich, and Nebuchadnezzar is called Taf Sar. So Yosef is given the responsibility of all of Egypt at age 30. He is one of the longest reigning kings in world history. He will be king, second in command, till he dies at age 110, 80 years. 80 years that he's on the throne. And according to some opinions, after Pharaoh dies, Yosef actually takes the throne of all of Egypt. Meaning there are opinions that he actually became king afterwards. Right now he's second in command at 30 years old. Paro changes Yosef's name. Changing a name is a way of showing ownership. It's a way of making the person promise allegiance. And he gives him to marry Osnas. We discussed Osnas. On a basic level, this is a way of showing that Yosef is exonerated. All the claims against him were false. If Potiphar is letting him marry his daughter Osnas, so that's a sign that there's peace between Yosef and Potiphar. It's also a good way politically to ensure that Potiphar won't make problems. His own daughter is held ransom in Yosef's house. Our sages say the story went differently. Our sages say, the pasuk says, Banot tzada alei shur. Yaakov Avinu in his blessings of Yosef will say, the girls were dancing all around the shur, the walls of the city. So the Medrash says, when Yosef became king, so it says they took him out in the chariot. So it says all the Egyptian girls heard there's a new prince and he's single. So they all got decked out, and they had this parade, and everyone was cheering him on. And he's being taken in the kingly chariot throughout Egypt slowly, and everyone's singing in his honor. And all the girls are throwing gifts at him and flowers at him. And Asnat was the girl, right, the daughter of Dinah, the Jewish girl, the only Jewish girl in Egypt. And they grew up together. Remember, Asnat was 7 when Yosef was 17, right? We know, let's do the math. Yaakov married Rachel after 7 years. Yaakov had Yosef after 14 years. Yaakov is going to remain by Laban another 6 years, till 20, right? So when Yaakov leaves Laban, Yosef is 7. Then he spends a year by Shechem. Yosef is 6. He spends a year by Shechem. Yosef is 7. That year, Rachel dies, right? They leave Shechem. The year Rachel dies is the year they left Shechem, is the year Dinah was abducted and became pregnant. So when Yosef is 7 years old, Dinah is pregnant with Asnas, right? At that year, or later that year, she gives birth to Asnas. So Yosef is either 7 or 8. And Asnas is going to be 7 years younger than him. Now, Parshas Vayeshev begins, Yosef is 17. That means Asnas is 10, or right? Right? She's 10. He's 17, right? 10, not 7. So she's 10. So that means when he, at age 17, is sold to Potiphar's house, she's 10. Now he's 30. So she's 23. So she's looking out the window at Yosef. They were together for a year in Potiphar's house. And she takes that locket. You remember Yaakov Avinu gave her a locket. Inside the locket was the story of that she's a Jew, that she is really Dinah's daughter. And on the locket was also written something in Hebrew. I don't remember what. I think the Medrash says he wrote Hashem's hidden name on the locket to protect her. It was supposed to be an amulet for her. So she takes the only piece of jewelry she has and she throws it at Yosef. And it lands on his lap and he sees Jewish writing. He says to the chariot, stop. Where's the girl? Who threw this? So they go searching. It's Asnat. So they introduce them. And Yosef says, okay, my shidduch. The one Jewish girl in Egypt. Okay. The best way to find a shidduch. Yeah, if you could interpret a dream and go around the chariot.
Tomorrow we put you in the chariot.
How did who know to do what?
God.
Asnat? She figured it's her one chance to get into Yosef. No, so it says everyone was throwing gifts at him. His chariot was going and they were throwing gifts at him. That was the procession.
She must have had a pretty good arm.
Yeah, okay. So, Yosef marries Asnat. And the 7 years of plenty fly by. Yosef is a genius. And Yosef knows how to store the grains in a way that they won't rot. Yosef tells all the Egyptians, you should know, there are going to be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. You should all store your food. We are taxing you so that we can store the food. You have to store your own food. The Egyptians all try, and their food rots. Yosef takes dirt. Every person that brings crops to put in storage has to bring the dirt the crops grew in. And Yosef says the dirt that it grew in will retain the crops. And so he has storage houses near each city. And by each city, he stores the grains. And it says they had different plants that prevented worms from coming. Yosef amasses them near the crops. And Yosef develops phenomenal storage houses to store the food of the Egyptians. Now, it says that even the Egyptian numerical system couldn't handle his storage. They had no more numbers. They didn't know how to calculate it anymore. So Yosef is amassing tremendous food, which will sustain the whole world for 7 years. Now, if you think about it, there's a lot of thought that has to go into this, because he has to ensure that in all this bureaucracy, people aren't tricking him. He has workers and workers and workers, contractors and subcontractors and sub-subcontractors. You know, the Russians have tremendous scientific developments because their scientists are never allowed to fail. So the results of their experiments are very good on paper. But very often in practice, doesn't work like the paper because they're not allowed to fail. So Yosef had to ensure that he develops a system where people are really faithful, where they're really doing what he's commanding them. That takes a lot of brilliance, meaning there's a lot of know-how that has to go into managing a whole country, taxing the people, ensuring that you really get the produce stored the way it should, and that no one's playing games. You know the story, there was a town where there was the poor man's shul and the wealthy man's shul. So the wealthy man's shul on Simchas Torah, they would buy a big keg of vodka, and everyone could drink vodka as they're dancing Simchas Torah. It was free reign. The vodka keg was open. Everyone could pour themselves vodka. Okay, so the poor man's shul, they say, we want to be like the rich man's shul. They decide, they have an idea. No one can afford to buy such a keg for Simchas Torah. But what they could afford is every week, every member will bring one schnapps glass of vodka and put it in the barrel. So they do it religiously. They make a pact, the whole shul, everyone brings one schnapps glass of vodka, and it works. Everyone shows up every Friday religiously with their little cup of vodka. They pour it into the keg. They're excited. Simchas Torah is coming all year. Everyone's been bringing a cup every day, because every Shabbos, because everyone wants to drink from it. And comes the dancing. Everyone's dancing, and the time comes to open the keg. They pour it out, and everyone drinks the tall water. Why? Because everyone figured, if everyone else brings vodka, I could get away with water. So everyone brought water. Everyone had the same idea. So they had a keg full with water. That's the danger in such a system. Yosef is storing so much grain, so much food. How does he ensure that people aren't cutting corners and then he has nothing? So Yosef was a genius. And the Torah describes how he had two children before the famine broke. Our sages derive from here that once the public is suffering, we're not supposed to be intimate. Couples separate. Today, halachically, we don't do this. Our custom is not to do this. It's very interesting. Even though in the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch it says this, practically, it almost never happens. Maybe because the Jewish people suffered so much, it endangered our future. But practically, this was not practiced. That's the commentaries. Each one describes how and where and what. Bottom line, it's rare that this ever happens, if ever. Okay, the 7 years of famine come. And initially, the Egyptians still have food, and then they run out of food. So they come to Yosef. Yosef says, my God doesn't feed people who are uncircumcised. You want my food? Go circumcise. So the Egyptians come to Pharaoh and they say, we need food. And Pharaoh says, go to Yosef. They say, we did. So Pharaoh says, what did he say? They say, he says a weird thing. He says, we have to all undergo this operation of a circumcision. So Pharaoh says, well, what's the problem? They say, what do you mean? We want food. Pharaoh says, well, Yosef's been warning you for 7 years there's going to be a famine. Why don't you have food? They say, we did. Pharaoh says, and what happened? They say, well, our food rotted. So Pharaoh says, you see this Yosef guy? He's a very powerful person. He cursed all your food and it all rotted. If you mess with him, who knows, you'll all die. You want his food, you better listen to Yosef, because otherwise, if he can make all your food rot, he can make you all dead. We will see that Pharaoh is really enjoying Yosef's rule. Pharaoh takes full advantage of the brilliance of Yosef to shift the Egyptians, the whole Egyptian, not only Egyptian economy, but the whole Egyptian political structure will change. Yosef will make it such that Pharaoh owns the whole country. He will own their land. He will own their bodies. They will willingly accept that Pharaoh owns everything. And Pharaoh enjoys letting Yosef run the show. Yosef tells them, you want my food? Then you can only get it if you circumcise. And the Egyptians have no choice. And so the Egyptians have to circumcise themselves. I did not find yet a place where it explains why Yosef was interested in this. I imagine the reason was because the Egyptians are described in the prophet as a nation that ejaculates like a mule, like a donkey. The Navi in Yechezkel says, "Asher b'sar chamorim b'saram." They're described being physical like donkeys. That you can look at them like horses. So that's a description. If any of you ever saw a horse urinate, it's like a hose. I'm saying it's a very crass description of the Egyptians. And our sages say that the Egyptians would exchange wives, the Egyptians would have women sleeping with women. The Egyptian culture was steeped with immorality and lust. And it could be that what Yosef was trying to do was to help them take control of their lust. And so Yosef says, how do I help them take control? If they can slice off part of their male organ, and then they can take control. Meaning, take control of themselves and their lusts. Perhaps that's what Yosef was thinking here. That this would help them evolve into being more moral people. So... Yosef opens up the storage houses, and the famine spreads out, and Yosef gives word that there's a fair price in Egypt, and every person that comes to buy grain is only allowed to buy a small amount that's enough for his family. Yosef is not willing to develop competing markets. Yosef says there will be a fair market in Egypt, and no one is allowed to resell the food they buy in Egypt. If anyone is caught reselling the food they bought, they will lose their license to buy food. Period. No questions asked. Whenever someone comes to buy food in Egypt, before they could buy food, they had to answer a list of questions. Who are you? What country are you from? Who's your father? How big is your family? What price did you hear we are selling the food for? Every person had to fill out a form. If the person heard an incorrect price, he had to give testimony who gave him the incorrect price. The Egyptian police would chase the person down and he'd be in big trouble. Because Yosef wanted to ensure a number of things. A, no nation would want to come to war with him. B, that there wouldn't be a mass rush for food. He wanted to keep a certain calm in the world, that the world knew there's a limitless supply of food, the market's going to remain fair. The worst thing that could happen is if panic would break out in the world. Yosef wanted the world to be calm, that Yosef's retaining a fair price. The second people know that, it's in their interest not to fight Yosef. Because Yosef's food becomes power, a calming power in the world. If they would think for a minute that Yosef's playing games with the prices, then the nations would be tempted to attack. So the interview, no one could buy food for someone else. You had to give a very good reason. There's an old sickly father. And they'd interview you. And all the information was recorded. Yosef kept a very exact record. And the record began before you bought the food. The record began when you entered the city. You wanted to enter Egypt, you went through this whole interview. They kept the record. Now you went to buy food, you got interviewed again. They could compare what you answered when you bought the food to what you answered when you entered the city. Are you telling the truth? Who are you? And Yosef would look over the records. Yosef kept an accounting. What's going on? Which nations are coming here? From what lands are coming? How many people from each country? Yosef wanted to have a clear picture of what was going on. Yosef also wanted to know when his brothers are coming into Egypt. He knew it was only a matter of time. In a good way, he's helping the world. By keeping the calm and keeping the prices fair, he's ensuring that everyone can get food. So Yaakov...
Yeah. How big was the world back then? How was the known world back then?
I don't know. You see, he kept a very exact record of what was going on in each storage house. Yaakov sees that in Egypt, people are going to buy food. He tells his children, why should you be different? Everyone else is going to buy food in Egypt. You go buy food in Egypt. The brothers go down, and Yaakov tells them, you're all good looking, you're all powerful. Don't walk in through one gate. Walk in through 12 different gates, through 10 different gates. They shouldn't know that you're all one family. Ayin hara. We don't want people to look badly upon you. The brothers of Yosef go down to Egypt. Our sages say, why are they described as the brothers of Yosef? When the brothers got an excuse to go down to Egypt, they all came up with the same idea. Great, we're going, we're going to look for Yosef. They were all devastated seeing their father in mourning now for 20 years. So they go down and they enter through 10 different gates. He doesn't send Binyamin. He says, look, his mother died en route. His brother died en route. I'm not letting him go. So Binyamin stays home. And Yaakov says, I'm scared what'll happen to him en route. So one thing we learn from there is that you cannot ignore the dangers in life. Sometimes people like to say, if I'm meant to die, I'll die. Torah doesn't say that. Torah says, could be you're meant to live, but if you endanger yourself, who knows? So Yaakov says, I'm not letting Binyamin go down. It's dangerous. Binyamin already has a bunch of kids. Binyamin isn't a little boy. 20 years have passed. Binyamin is 20 years old, married with kids. They enter through 10 different gates. That night, Yosef gets an accounting of all the gates and who entered. He sees Reuven ben Yaakov from Canaan, Shimon ben Yaakov from Canaan, Levi ben Yaakov from Canaan, 10 different gates. He tells his officers, close all the storage houses, leave one open. Everyone who wants to buy food from today onward has to come to one storage house. He positions himself on a rooftop, spying over that storage house. He's waiting for his brothers to come. Day one passes, two passes, three passes, his brothers don't show up. 3 days have passed, they're in the city, they don't show up. He says, take out the police. He takes out 70 armed men, and they go searching throughout the city. Where are the 10 brothers of Yosef? Where are they? They've been searching for Yosef. They weren't interested in food right now. They were interested in finding Yosef. So they went to the brothels throughout Egypt, looking for Yosef. Okay, they find them. They round them up, and they bring them to Yosef. So Yosef is standing in front of them. He's all wrapped up. He's aged. It's been 13 years. The brothers all bow before him. And Yosef comes out, and he starts yelling at them in Egyptian. He has a translator. He's not talking their language, right? And he says, where are you from? He knows. They say, we're from Canaan. Yosef remembers the dreams. He says, you're spies. They say, no, we're not spies. We came to buy food. He says, buy food? Why'd you enter through 10 different gates? If you came to buy food, how come you spent 3 days going around my city? 3 days. What are you doing 3 days going around the city for? So the brothers say, well, we went in through 10 different gates because our father told us it's a bad omen to all come in through one gate. Right, says Yosef. You didn't come in through 10 different gates to spy out the different ways to attack my city. And why do you spend 3 days going through brothels? So they say, well, we have a brother who's missing. Oh, so you thought he'd be at brothels, really? You didn't go there to spy out and hear information? They say, yeah. Oh, so he says, they say, we have a little brother who's back home, and the other one's missing, and we were searching for him. Yosef says, I don't think so. He takes out his goblet. He knocks the goblet. He says, my goblet just told me that one of you, two of you, led a war and just killed the whole city. So the brothers say, yeah, who? So he says, Shimon and Levi. So they take a step back. So Yosef says, I don't buy what you guys are saying, and he throws them all in prison. So the brothers have a problem. He puts them in jail for 3 days. And he tells them, we're going to let you, we're going to send back one of you. He'll bring back the little boy. And if I'll see you're all really the sons of one man, then we'll have what to talk about. But don't try to trick me. Because you see, through my goblet, I knew the names of Shimon and Levi. I know who you are. Don't try to trick me.
That's Midrash?
Yeah.
From where?
Midrash Tanhuma. So, after 3 days in jail, he tells them, look, I'm scared of God, and what we're going to do is take one of you and put him in jail. Shimon was the one who pushed him into the pit. So he takes Shimon and pushes him into jail. Yosef's goal in this whole story is to help the brothers do tshuva. Yosef isn't taking revenge. Yosef's goal is to recreate a scenario where they will be faced with the exact same thing they did last time, and they can fix it. What Yosef is going to do is set them up so that they will have a situation where they can easily get rid of one brother and walk back home peacefully, and they won't do that. And in so doing, Yosef is giving them an opportunity to do tshuva. So step one, he takes Shimon. No one's up in arms. They don't say all for one, one for all, you can't touch him. So he tells them, one brother's staying in jail. The rest of you go, bring your little brother here, and then we'll see that you're telling the truth. I don't want your families to die. Your families are counting on the food. So you guys go take your stuff back. The brothers start talking to one another. And they say, you know, this is all our fault. The truth is that we saw our brother when he was suffering and we didn't listen. Even though he was wrong, but we should have had compassion for his suffering. That's why all of this is happening to us. And Reuven says, didn't I tell you? Don't hurt the kid. You didn't listen. Now we're being taken to task over his blood. And Yosef listens. They don't realize he understands the language, right? He's talking Egyptian. So Yosef leaves. He bursts out crying. Now he hears part of the conversation that had happened beforehand. And he comes back. He takes Shimon, throws him into jail, and he sends them home. Now, he tells his son Menashe, make sure that you give them a lot of food, give them food for the road, and put their money inside the bottom of their sack. Give them the Israeli money they came with, put it back. They should come home, they should find their money there. Okay, they take their stuff, they head back, and that night one of them stops, Levi stops to feed his donkey, and he sees his money there. He tells his brothers, oh no, my money's here. And now they're going to claim we're thieves, that we didn't even pay for the goods we took. So now they got really scared. They're in big trouble. So what did they say? What is God doing to us? And our sages say, this is a fulfillment of the verse in Mishle. Ivelet Adam, the foolishness of man, tisalef darko, is what causes man's life to be twisted. We mess up ourselves. Ve'al Hashem yizaf libo. And man turns to God and says, what are you doing to me? Man does it to himself and then blames his creator. So they come home to Yaakov. And they're telling him the story. Now, in this story, they could portray it as it's all your fault. You told us to go in through 10 different gates, Abba. Right? That's what caused the problem. They tell him what happened. And they tell him, you know, he claims we're all spies. And we said, we're not. And he told us that if you're telling the truth, you're going to bring the little brother down. But here's the food. Let your families eat. But bring down the little one. They empty out their bags, and they find each one finds his little bag of money inside their bag. And when they and Yaakov see it, they all get scared. And Yaakov says, you're destroying me. Yosef's gone. Shimon's gone. Now you want to take Binyamin? He's saying like this. Yosef had the rights to be the firstborn after Reuven transgressed. He disappeared. Who is next in line, it would seem? Shimon. Now he's gone. After he's gone, who's next in line? My second son from Rachel.
Binyamin.
So now you suddenly come back and tell me, give me Binyamin. Forget it. He's saying, you're bumping off. My firstborn's here. No. Reuven says, Dad, if you suspect me in all this, I'll put my two kids at risk. You can kill my two kids if I don't bring them back. Yaakov says, what a foolish son. Your kids are my kids. You're taking my collateral for my loan. He says, no way. If that's how you talk, forget it. I'm not giving you my son. So Yehuda tells the brothers, wait, the food will end, and then Dad will sing a different tune. They finish the food, and Yaakov, who suspects the brothers, he's been suspecting them for 20 years over Yosef's being missing. And now he suspects them over Shimon. So Yaakov tells them, go buy food. What's he telling them? He doesn't believe their story. So he figures, if now the food's done, maybe now he'll call their bluff. And Yehuda says, look, the guy warned us not to show up without Binyamin. So if you're sending Binyamin with us, we'll go. And if not, we're not going. Because he told us, don't see my face without your brother. Now he knew Shimon by name. I can't play games. Yaakov says to them, why'd you do this to me? Why'd you tell him that you have another brother? They tell him, you know what the guy knew about us? We didn't know this is where it would lead to. Yehuda tells his father, give me the land. I'm taking responsibility, and like this we're going to live. Because if we stay like this, we're all going to die anyways. But if I don't bring him back, I'm taking responsibility in this world and the world to come. Believe me, Dad, we could have been back twice already. Yaakov says, okay, if you're going to do that, so take some of the good fruits that we have, the dried fruits of Israel, bring the man a gift, and take double money, and bring back the money that showed up. Maybe it's a mistake. Take your brother, and I'm going to pray for you. And from here we learn to pray before problems arise. Yaakov starts praying before they get to Egypt. He starts praying, you should find favor in the man's eyes, and you should come back with news of your other brother in Binyamin. Notice he doesn't call Shimon by name. He's really upset at Shimon. Ever since what happened with Shechem, he's disappointed in Shimon. And so he was in no rush to get Shimon out of jail. Let him sit there. So they take the gift. They come down to Egypt. Yosef sees them. He sees Binyamin. He looks at Binyamin. Binyamin's matured. He's grown a beard. He looks just like he remembers his father Yaakov. He looks at Binyamin and he thinks he's seeing his father. He gets very excited. He tells the person, bring him to the house. They bring him to the house. He sends his son Menashe. He says, you slaughter the animal in front of them because they won't eat food unless they know how the meat's being slaughtered. Menashe calls them in. He slaughters the food in front of them. They're brought into Yosef's house. They get very nervous. They tell Menashe, they say, wait, we know you're upset at us because of the money. We brought back other money. There was a mistake. Menashe says, no, your God gave you a gift. We got your money. On my records it says you paid. You have nothing to worry about. So now the brothers are being led to feel like everything's good. Yosef gave Menashe instructions. He says, confuse them. We will sometimes make them feel like we love them, sometimes like we hate them. We have to keep playing with them, back and forth, and back and forth. So Menashe does the job. He tells them, your God loves you. You got a gift. On our records, you paid in full. Keep the money. You're okay. The master wants to party with you. My father, the king, he's invited you to the palace. So they come to the palace. It's good news. and they're brought to the royal tables, and then they're established, each one according to their family. Yosef comes to the meal, he hits his goblet, he says, Reuven, you're the eldest here. You're not talking like the eldest, but you're the eldest. You sit there. All the brothers look. How did he know that? And then he starts hitting his goblet one after another. Then he tells them, let me tell you how you guys had your bed set up when you were little kids. He hits his goblet. He starts telling them stories about their childhood. The brothers are standing there in shock. They don't know what to do. Yosef's going to play a game. Because when his goblet's going to disappear, he's going to claim, you guys were very taken by my goblet, right? You thought you'd just use that goblet to find your missing brother. That's why you stole my goblet from me, huh? It's all a game. And then he puts Binyamin right next to him. He says, your mother died when you were a little boy. My mother died when I was a little boy. We will eat together. They're sitting down to party. He gives them a lot of wine. Everything's going great. And we will pick up here, Bezat Shem, Thursday night. I hope you guys are going to come to Kochav Yaakov. I don't mind continuing. You guys want to continue another 15 minutes? Okay. I want to see you in Kochav Yaakov. Okay. So we're going to continue. So they bring him the gift. Yosef asks them, is everything okay? Is your elder father okay? Is he still alive? And they say, your servant, our father, is still alive. Yosef will hear again and again how they call his father, their father, his servant. Yosef will lose a year of his life for every time that he allows them to call his father, his servant, and doesn't stop them. The game was okay, but there was a part of the game where you should have stopped them and said, your father's a respectful man in Israel. He's the king of people in Israel. Don't call him my servant. He should have stopped them, and he didn't. And our sages say, you see, for that, every time he will hear his father called his servant, he will lose another year of his life. So,
which midrash is that?
I think it's a Medrash Rabba. I don't remember it in the Tanhuma. I think it's in the Medrash Rabba. So Yosef can't contain himself. He sees Binyamin and he goes to another room to cry. He washes off his face. He comes and they sit down to eat. And during the meal, they are served the meat, which the Egyptians wouldn't dare eat. And he arranges them in the order of families, every table for a different mother, for Leah's children, for Bilhah's children, for Zilpah's children. And the people are in shock. And he's telling them stories about their childhood. And he's sending gifts to each one. And he gives Binyamin a lot of gifts. And for the first time in 20 years, they will all drink wine. From the day they sold Yosef, they didn't drink wine, nor had he. And on that day, there's a reunification of the family. They don't know it. They're all eating and drinking. And then Yosef tells Menashe, his elder son, fill up their bags and give them as much food as they can carry and put their money back into their bags. Again, they're going to find their money back in their bags. And then take my silver goblet and put it in the stash of the youngest one. And they do that. The morning shines and the people are sent off with their donkeys. Our sages say, from here we learn, try not to travel at night. Nighttime's dangerous, you don't see where you're going. We're talking about traveling by foot. So he waits, they wait till there's enough light in the morning, and they start traveling. They have just left the city. And Yosef tells Menashe, take our army, pursue them. Make sure you catch them when they can still see the cities of Egypt behind them. When they still have the memory. They know what Egypt is. They know what the power of Egypt is. Catch them when they're outside the city, but close enough that they still sense the power of Egypt. Come with a full army. He shows up with a full army. They chase after him. They turn around. They see an army chasing after them. They stop. And Menashe rides up to them. He has clear instructions from his father. Be nice and be mean. Be nice and be mean. So he shows up and he right away goes on the attack. Why do you do that to us? We were so nice to you. We were so good to you. Why are you evil to us? You know, you had to take the one goblet my master likes to drink, and you know he uses that for all his sorcery. It's really evil what you guys did. So they say to him, why would you talk to us that way? You know, when there was a mistake and your accounting didn't even register it, we brought you back our money to pay extra. And now you tell us that we stole something? We wouldn't steal anything from your master's house. And anyways, we adhere to the Nolchai laws. And if someone steals, they get the death penalty. If you find the goblet by any one of us, he's dead. Bam, the brothers just repeated their father's error. Yaakov said that to Lavan, and that's why Rachel died. Now the brothers are repeating Yaakov's error and saying, whoever you find the goblet by is dead, and we're all willing to be your slaves. He says, you know, you guys are right. That's what should be here. But whoever we find the goblet by, it's enough. He should be our slave. Notice we're recreating the story of Yosef. There's legitimate cause for Binyamin to be enslaved. The brothers can walk away and say it's his fault, just like they walked away from Yosef. So they quickly take off their bags, and Menashe knows full well where it is, so he does the exact opposite. He starts with Reuven. They go through all of his bags. He says, you're clean. Shimon, you're clean. Levi. They finish everyone, and they get to Binyamin. They go through Binyamin's bag. Got it! The brothers can't believe it. He pulls out of Binyamin's bag the goblet. They come to Binyamin, and each one gives him such a whack. You thief! You son of a thief! Your mother died because she was a thief. Now you're a thief just like her! Binyamin's silent. Binyamin knows he didn't steal it. But if he's going to say, I'm not a thief, then he has to, by inference, say, but my mother is. So when they tell him, you're the thief, the son of a thief, he can't answer. What's he supposed to say? So he's silent. Bein kitefav shechem. Yaakov Avinu will say, between Binyamin's shoulder blades is the Shechina. Binyamin, who stood there and received the mistrust of every brother. Every brother whacked him between his shoulder blades, and they all tear their clothing. They're all weeping. What's going to be now? The family's going to be destroyed? Binyamin, what'd you do to us? So they reload their donkeys. They come back to the city. Yehuda and his brothers enter the palace. Ordinarily, at this time of day, Yosef was in court. But Yosef doesn't want to embarrass the brothers in front of the Egyptians, so he stayed in the palace, so that the brothers will have a relatively private audience before him. They come back in and they bow before him. And Yosef says, what'd you guys do? You thought that I couldn't figure it out? I use my sorcery and I know who stole it. Yehuda says, what can we say? How can we justify ourselves? God has obviously found us faulty, and we're prepared to be servants. Yehuda is slowly shifting the conversation. Remember what they said? We'll kill the one who stole it, and the rest of us will be slaves. So Yehuda wants to at least shift it away from the death penalty. So Yehuda begins by saying, we should all be your slaves. He's shifted the conversation away from the death penalty. Yosef says, no, I wouldn't do that. Listen here. You guys, I believe you. You had nothing to do with it. The only one who stole the goblet, he's going to remain my slave. You guys can all go home in peace. And with that, our parsha ends. Yosef tells them all, you're all welcome to leave. The thief will stay as my slave, and you guys can all go home. And in next week's parsha, we will see one of the greatest battles of words between Yehuda and Yosef, where Yosef will tell Yehuda, you've done it before, you can do it again, all you have to do is tell your father, the boy stole just like his mother did, and that's why he's a slave, and just go home and tell your father that. What are you worried about? Guys, it's legitimate, it's fair, go. And our parsha, our sages say, ends really with Alul Shalom El Avichem. The Medrash says, Yosef told them, go up to peace to your father in heaven. Go! You can be at peace and tell yourselves you did nothing wrong leaving your brother as a slave. And Yosef wants to arouse within them the question, how will we face our father in heaven? We've been on this scene 20 years ago, and we let our brother go. We sold him as a slave. When Yosef says, go up to your father in peace, the Medrash says, he says, go up to your father in heaven in peace. Go tell him you're okay, you did nothing wrong. Yosef is forcing the brothers to the corner. And the brothers have not yet done tshuva for what they did with Yosef. They're ready to bring him back home. But they haven't yet said, you know, we did wrong. What did they say? They said we should have had compassion for him. They didn't say we had no right to sell a brother. They didn't say he was one of ours. They said, poor kid, we shouldn't have sold him. That's not tshuva. And so Yosef is cornering them and trying to do the biggest favor he can for the Jewish people. We're about to enter a new era and Yosef knows it. The 210 years of Jewish exile in Egypt are about to begin. And they're about to begin on the wrong note. They're about to begin with an enmity with the brother selling Yosef. And if they begin like this, then we're in deep trouble. Our ability to exist in exile is if we help one another, if we're unified. So Yosef is going to corner the brothers again and again, and he's about to up the ante again and again to try and bring the brothers to a point where they say, we can't do this. We're not going to let go of one of our brothers. That's what Yosef wants to hear. And he's doing them a favor in the story. He's allowing them to have an opportunity to do real tshuva, something which life doesn't always afford us. He's recreating the scene in a much harsher tone. At this point, they could legitimately walk away. It's all his fault. Yes?
At which point are we counting officially the 400 years of exile?
Come Thursday night, we'll discuss it. It's a good